Welcome to Pharmacy Pathways, everybody. We are sitting down with Dr. Dee Dee Kim, who is going to be representing oncology. She is an oncology clinical pharmacist, and she works in an infusion center. So she is going to be telling us what that's like, how she got to that track and on that path, and also giving us a breakdown of what her day-to-day looks like, and also giving us some advice for those of us who are interested in going into that pathway ourselves. So, but I don't want to do all the talking. I would love for you to give a introduction of yourself and who you are and where you come from.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. My name's Dee Dee. I'm originally from Arizona, but I did move from state to state a lot. When I lived in Arizona, I thought the weather was too hot. So then I went to undergrad in Michigan, which I thought was too extreme of the cold. One of the reasons why I came to pharmacy school in Maryland, because it had good four seasons. I do have some families in Maryland, so that's where I went to my pharmacy school. I did move to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for my residency, so I did move a lot. Mm-hmm. After living in Pittsburgh and living in different states, I learned that I do like Maryland, so this is where I settled, and this is where I'm working right now at Sinai Hospital as oncology mm-hmm. clinical pharmacist.
That was a nice little summary, and you there's several things within that story that I would like you to expand upon. Mm-hmm. I really like when our guests talk about like what inspired them mm-hmm. to get into pharmacy in the first place, and then how you got on the clinical track.
Yeah, so I kind of always knew that I want to be in the medicine field. I just didn't think I was gonna be a pharmacist. So I went to undergrad as a pre-med, and I was studying all the prerequisites, which was pretty similar to what pharmacy mm-hmm. School would require of. At the time, one of my close friends decided that she wants to go to pharmacy school instead of med school. So I then looked into the pharmacy school and kind of thought maybe this is something that would be a right fit for me as well. Because at the time, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if going to be a doctor would be something for yeah. me. So then I did kind of change a little bit. Once I went to pharmacy school, though, I didn't know how many career paths there could be. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my pharmacy school did really encourage students to either go to the clinical path or fellowship mm-hmm. path. So yeah. I thought it was yeah. very limited options. So very naturally, I did decide to do the clinical path. So during my fourth year, I did what is called a clinical track, which is basically like a mini residency. I'm at a one mm-hmm. hospital doing all the rotations. So that's where I was trying to figure out before I go into my job, seeing is really residency right for me. Mm-hmm. After going through it, I did really enjoy being in the clinical path. So I did decide to pursue PGY1. That's when I went to Pittsburgh for my PGY1 training. I did decide not to do PGY2 only because there wasn't one specific field that I felt comfortable doing for lifelong time. Yeah. So I just decided to just finish with PGY1. And the director at the time did offer me a job at the point when I was done with the residency. So it was very easy transition for me to work at the hospital. I already did residency because I already knew a lot of the technicians or preceptors who were now going to be my coworkers. So yeah. that was a pretty easy first job. At the time I got hired on, my director asked me if I can be cross-trained in oncology satellite pharmacy. So mm-hmm. I did get hired on as unit-based pharmacists, basically people who are working on as a decentralized pharmacist. And I was getting cross-trained in oncology satellite pharmacy as well.
That's a lot. And can you break down like what decentralized mm-hmm. means for our listeners?
Basically, decentralized pharmacists are pharmacists that are in charge of all the orders that's coming through for that specific unit. And this can include warfarin management, pharmacokinetics management for antibiotics, or any other medicine related work. So that's what my inpatient decentralized pharmacist role was. On the other side, for my oncology satellite pharmacy, those were covering patients who were admitted inpatient to get chemotherapy. And for that, I was reviewing labs, doing the order entry, making sure the doses are appropriate, doing the technician supervision on the product management side, making sure that all the products are looking okay before it gets to the patient. So the main difference that I'm going to talk about later, what I'm doing now, is that my first job only covered hospitalized patients, and also I only had adult patient population.
And it wasn't as clinical. It was more of the making sure the screening component and making sure it's good to go behind the scenes.
Yes, because we also had pharmacists that were specialized in oncology who specifically had PGY2 trained. So they were the one doing the rounding with the providers. So they were the one that's working closely with the providers, making more of the clinical intervention. So once everything looked right on their end, is when the order came to us. So I was doing some clinical, but not as involved as what clinical pharmacists would be doing on the floor.
Did you, I'm curious, did you ever think that oncology would be on your radar? I remember as a student, I just, even looking at the chapters in the material, I was like, no, it's not for me. Was that ever on your radar at all?
It was not. I don't think if my director asked me to work in that specific field, it did. Oncology can sound a little daunting and scary because it is a high-risk medication. You can think like there's exposure, but also you might, one mistake can be very detrimental. So I don't think I would get into oncology field at the time, but because I was like right off of residency, that's what I was asked to do. So I think I kind of agreed on it. But also I wasn't gonna work independently until I felt comfortable because it's a very specialized field. I did get enough training to feel comfortable before I have to work independently.
Yeah, it's just so funny how life takes us,
Yeah.
because now that that's what you do,
Right.
like you focus on oncology. And you were sharing that in this position, for your first year of clinical work, you were mainly doing transitions of care clinics and heart failure clinics.
So that heart failure and transitions care clinic came as my second job. Yeah. So after working at Pittsburgh UPMC Hospital for a couple of years, I did want to settle in Maryland. Is the reason why I moved to Maryland and got started working at St. Joseph Hospital. I did get hired on as a unit-based pharmacist as well, which was similar to what I was working at UPMC for. So that was a very easy transition for me. But at the time of this hospital hire, they needed someone to work in heart failure and transitions of care. So I guess I'm someone who agrees very easily, but it did sound like a good career opportunity for me. I did have some ambulatory care rotations for my residency, so it wasn't something that was totally new. So I did agree to take on that position. So half of the time that I was working at inpatient side as a decentralized pharmacist, and also the other half of the time I was working closely with providers and patients providing that MCare, more outpatient setting care.
Yeah, those are two areas that I really enjoy,
Yeah.
specifically transitions of care and in heart failure. So now you're in this role, you're doing more, you're doing half of the centralized and then half of the clinic focus. What brought you to your current position where you are in an infusion center and you are more clinical in your oncology focus?
Right. So at one point, after working at a hospital for a very long time, I was getting a little tired of the work-life balance portion, working at a hospital, having to work evening shift, night shift, weekend, and holiday. And at a perfect timing, my friend did reach out to me saying, I do have a job position opening at an infusion center that's going to give you more of a work-life balance that doesn't require you to do those weekend holiday commitment. But also she knew that I did have an oncology background. It's my first job, so I wasn't actively looking for a job, but that opportunity kind of fell on my lap. So that's how I got to this job.
Yeah, I think that's important for us to consider. The area that we go into determines our quality of life, because a hospital never closes.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's Christmas or Thanksgiving, people need help. And that was also something that brought me to the outpatient preference in pharmacy. But I would like you to define like what an infusion center is.
Yeah.
Because I think that's very niche specific, and it's not broadly, it's not not very broadcast. And after you define what it is, can you give us some insight on like what role does it play in patient care in general and disease state management?
Yeah, so infusion center is basically an outpatient clinic that patients can get infusion therapy such as chemotherapy, biologics, blood products, or any other specialized injections, something like antibiotics or osteoporosis medications. Anything that would be a special injection can be done at an infusion center. Where I work currently, most of our patients are from infusion center. However, my current role does provide services to inpatient hospital. And also, not only do I cover the adult patients, but we do also cover for our pediatric patients. To kind of explain how infusion center will play a role in patient care is the main difference between the hospital and being getting treated at an infusion center. For example, if patients got admitted to a hospital for different medication or different medical reasons, and now they're admitted and they're due for chemotherapy, that might be one of the reasons why they would be getting chemotherapy as inpatient side. Okay. Or if it's a patient that needs a very close monitoring, whether they're having severe side effects from it, or maybe they may be newly diagnosed to it, someone that needs close monitoring would be treated at a hospital setting. However, for getting treated in the infusion center, it does provide better quality of life to patients because it is more comfortable setting, it's more convenient, patients can get their infusions, and when they're done, they can go home. Oftentimes, it is cheaper than getting admitted to the hospital. From the hospital side, if patients are coming in and out to get their infusion done, we are freeing up the bed in the inpatient side who might need the bed for another medical reasons.
I didn't think about all of those things. So are you guys like attached to the hospital, or are you a separate building outside of the hospital?
So our pharmacy is located right next to infusion center. However, we do deliver medications to the inpatient side. Normally, that or those medications are delivered by our pharmacy technicians. The hospital is connected, but our physical location is within infusion center.
And are most infusion centers like that?
I believe so, just so then they have easier access. I'm not sure if every infusion center will cover inpatient side too, because again, my first hospital, I was working at a satellite pharmacy, but we did have a separate infusion center for outpatient setting, and I was only serving inpatient patients. So I think that can actually different by hospital, how they deal with it.
Nice. Thank you for that explanation. And you listed very sensitive medication. So when you were explaining the types of medications you're administering, chemotherapy, biologics, so people who need immunosuppressive therapy, osteoporosis, these, they're sensitive. And so that means they require a lot of control, more than the average, tablets that you would keep on the pharmacy shelf. So how do you guys screen and control for these types of things and making sure that they're safe and efficacious by the time they reach the patient?
Right. So we want to make sure all those infusions are sterile. There's something that's called USP guideline that really provides the good guidelines for hospital to follow, basically how to handle medications that are hazardous and that needs to be kept sterile. There are a couple of things that we do as a pharmacy group to kind of remain our pharmacy kind of more of a clean area. For one of the example, there's a lot of cleaning involved. Our technicians will have to clean their hood at the beginning of their shift and also at the end of their shift. The ante room, the hazardous room, non-hazardous room will have to get cleaned every monthly basis. There's also reports and certification that has to be done at a certain period of time to do air sampling, surface sampling to make sure our infusion center is up to standards. We do have Board of Pharmacy come out for inspection and kind of give us advices if there's anything that we have to done. As for the personnel, every pharmacist and technicians making the compounding medications, we do have to pass biannual fingertip tests as well with the media field tests.
And the fingertip test, I did a rotation at an infusion center, and I have a lot of respect for what you guys do. And my preceptor was a tough cookie, and she did not play about her clean room and her infusion center. We did the fingertip testing. So you are, please remind me, because you're testing with the fingertip testing, you're testing your ability to wash your hands.
So there's some hospitals, I think, do have different type of testing they might do. Sometimes there's fingertip testing done that's done after garbing and washing your hand. Specifically, what our pharmacy emphasize is after doing media field testing, meaning there's certain like vials and basically just normal saline bags that we are gonna have to make a couple transfers just to kind of looking like we're compounding something. And when you're done with that media field testing, that's when you're gonna do the fingertip test to make sure your fingers are still pretty sterile even after touching multiple things.
And so that's okay. So we're looking for your technique. What are you doing under the hood in the clean room? And is your practice contaminating, at what risk
Basically.
of contaminating samples that go into patients' bodies at the end of the day? And also, if you're touching things and then you're picking up other products, now you're cross-contaminating. And then we have, you mentioned hazardous, and then there's non-hazardous. What would be considered, like, what determines whether something is hazardous? And how do you protect the person working with these medications? How are they protected from these hazardous drugs?
So I think there's a list called NIOSH where they kind of categorize medications whether they are hazardous or not. So if the medication is considered hazardous, which I might reference as HD because that's what I might
HD, yeah.
refer it to as. If they are categorized as HD, then it needs to be done on the HD side. A lot of time, those are gonna be chemotherapy, biologics. Most of those medications will be considered as HD medications. On the other side, non-hazardous, non-HD medications can be like blood products or antiemetics like Zofran, dexamethasone, or sometimes patients might be getting hydration bag with electrolytes in it. Those can be something that can be compounded in the non-HD side. some of the things that we minimize exposure to those HD medications is, one, we do have a closed system transfer device. Basically, those are the equipment that's minimizing risk because they don't have any needle exposing. It's more like a transfer device that you can kind of like click into it.
Like a lock system.
Right. So that's going to really minimize the risk of technician being poked in the needle or, you know, having like powder flying around, for example. That's going to really minimize the risk. And also, if you think of, you know, the hood, you can kind of imagine someone wearing personal protective equipment, which is called PPE. Those are like gowns, chemo gowns, goggles, or masks that people are wearing to kind of protect themselves from getting exposed. The pharmacist checking every product, we're always wearing gloves to make sure that, you know, we are not getting anything on our hands. If there's some chemo spill I have on my gloves, I'll change every time because, you know, we don't want to be touching things and exposing other people to it.
Right.
We do also have a chemo spill kit and eye wash station in case there's any chemo spills. So those are the procedures that we have in place to protect our employees.
It sounds like, yeah, USP, there are so many rules and regulations, and I really like how there are, it's not just about protecting the patient, but it's also about protecting the employee who's preparing the medications for the patient. Okay, so now we're going to move into your roles and responsibilities as an oncology clinical pharmacist in an infusion center.
Okay, so we have five different roles, so I'm going to try to break it down to each role and kind of explain what a pharmacist might do in my work setting. How I see, the first role is the most important because that's the person who's reviewing charts. So basically, they're kind of reviewing patient profile. And we do this 3 days in advance of patient's appointment time. And the reason why we do it in so much advance is to make sure we have the medications in supply, in stock. So then when patient's here, we are not scrambling to look for medication. And also, if there's any clarification that needs to be done for patient medication, we have ample time to talk to providers and get the answer we need before patient's getting there. As the chart review, first thing I look for is whether a patient is consented for chemo, because it is important that patients understand the risk that's coming with chemotherapy, and we have to make sure that patients are educated before they're getting the treatment. So on top of that,
they sign consent forms?
And they have to, every chemotherapy that they're going to be getting needs to be listed on the consent. So then patient is aware of the treatment they're getting. So that's the one of the first steps that I'm looking when I'm doing the chart check. After that, I'm reading doctor's note, reviewing patient's labs to make sure if there's any adjustment of the dose that needs to be done, whether they have renal dysfunction or hepatic dysfunction. Those will be the time I'm looking to see if there's any dose adjustment that needs to be done. I'm looking at, are there any drug-drug interaction with their home medication that might have to be talked about? Are there any pre-meds or hydration that needs to be added as part of their regimen? And also making sure the regimen that's ordered matches what the what type of cancer patient has to ensure, is it the accurate dose? You know, just going through the guideline and comparing with patient chart to see what is ordered is what patients should be getting. So basically, chart review person is basically doing the deep dive into the chart to ensure safe and effective treatment for patient.
And that is called first check.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned it. So that kind of leads to our next role, which is the second check. We always want to make sure we have double check in place. After doing the first check during the chart review, we have the second verification done. Someone who's called verification pharmacist. When patient gets to the clinic or whether it's in the inpatient site, the orders will drop into pharmacist queue. Basically, they're reviewing for the most recent lab, because a lot of time if patients are coming in for infusion at our pharmacy, they might be getting labs on the treatment day.
The day of.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. So that pharmacist will have more of a recent lab compared to what the chart review person might have. Mm-hmm. So they're looking to see that renal function trended differently. Do they have outstanding lab? Do they have any electrolyte imbalance that we have to treat? Mm-hmm. They're looking for all those labs to make sure. Mm-hmm. And also, was there any communication done since the chart tag until the treatment day that might mm-hmm. defer their treatment plan? So basically, mm-hmm. they're doing whatever the chart person did, but at a faster pace because it's going to be a busier day. So I mentioned earlier that we have 5 positions. We actually have 2 pharmacists doing the verification portion. So those 2 pharmacists will be serving as a second check person.
But to clarify, they're not checking the same patient twice.
No.
It's just 2 checks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have 2 different verification people because we actually have a subset, another cancer center at a different location that we're also covering for. So because of the workload and patient volume, we just have 2 patients, 2 pharmacists checking for the orders.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have first check and second check. Mm-hmm. Can the pharmacist who did the first check do the second check?
We try.
Because it's a different day, right? Mm-hmm. Would that be permittable?
So we're pretty strategic when it comes to scheduling. We don't want to schedule someone as a verification person if they already did the chart check. So when our managers make schedule, we try to avoid that. Sometimes when there's call out, it might happen, mm-hmm. you know, then we might switch, shift around. Yeah. But in the most part, we try to have another fresh eye looking at those orders, because that's when we can really catch an error if there's any.
That is very strategic.
Yes.
Okay, so we went through 3. What's mm-hmm. the next?
So the last 2 pharmacists, we have the who is called opening pharmacist and closing pharmacist. Mm-hmm. Basically, those are 2 people on site. And the difference, I'm going to go through the different tasks that they're given with. First one, the opening pharmacists are basically someone who's going to set up for the whole day. They're kind of the charge pharmacist. So they're going to call each unit to kind of go over the schedule to make sure what we have on our schedule matches there to avoid any surprises. Mm. And then they're the one who's going to be supervised technicians. So whenever technicians prepare a medication, the pharmacist will have to check their orders. There's more things that goes with just simply checking, because they're making sure, is it the right drug that was pulled? Is it the right fluid that was used? Mm-hmm. Is there any overfill? Do we have to take out any overfill? Is it the right type of tubing that was used? Mm-hmm. Is there any refrigeration, or is it going to be room temp? Does it have to have an amber bag for protect from light? So there's a lot of components that pharmacists is checking, and you can imagine, you know, you have to be really focused, because that's the last checks before it gets to the patient, before as for the pharmacy part. So we want to make sure that the pharmacist is really focused on what they're doing. That's where the closing pharmacist will come into play to minimize any disruption in the workflow. The closing pharmacist will help answering phone calls from nurses or providers. Mm-hmm. And they're the one kind of being on the computer and kind of helping things at the outside of the checking medication part. That pharmacist might also do some patient education. Yeah. We also do something like oral chemotherapy prescription reviews. Not only do we cover infusion chemotherapy, because we are oncology pharmacy in general, we do also review oral chemotherapy. So mm-hmm. that closing pharmacist will kind of review that. And also that closing pharmacist will stay at the clinic to close down the pharmacy until the last patient is completed with their infusion, because we don't want to have a patient that's reacting to something and they need something. So we always make sure that pharmacist is staying until the last patient is done with their infusion.
I've had so many questions while you were talking, so I hope I remember all of them.
Okay.
But really quickly, what are the hours of your clinic?
So our opening pharmacists will have to come in at 7, and they're done at 3:30. The closing pharmacists will come in at a later time, but they stay until 5:30. So basically, our clinic is open from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Okay. So,
and what are the patient appointment times? What range is that?
It can actually come as soon as sometime I open the door. I'm getting phone calls from the nurses, because remember, we are also covering patients from the inpatient side.
Okay.
So although infusion center might be more cognitive about the appointment time, but usually around 7:30 or 8, those are usually the time where we have the infusion center orders kicking in.
Okay.
But sometimes it can happen earlier, because some patients might show up a little earlier.
Yeah.
It's a fair game that we can expect someone to show up to appointment at 7:30, and then rarely we do have to stay over 5:30, because usually the infusion clinic is closed. Sometimes I do have to stay maybe 15 minutes later to make sure patients are done, but also the nurses want to make sure that patients are completed within that time, because they have our similar work schedule too. So there's not many times where I have to stay later than 5:30.
Nice, okay, I'm just trying to remember everything that I wanted to ask you. So the checking pharmacist, the opening pharmacist, that's the correct term. So do you have a separate space? You said they can't, we really want to minimize distractions, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there like a separate space that they have away from maybe the more of the traffic and disruption?
Yeah. So we do have a separate room where we are storing chemotherapy medication vials. That space is separate from where the computers, where technicians, where pharmacists are sitting for, you know, regular time that they're not making any medications, to make sure we're segregating all those medications apart.
Yeah.
And that will be the area the pharmacists will be checking medications, because, you know, there can be still some of exposure to it in the air or whatever. So we try to segregate that. So we do have a separate room for that matter.
Yeah. And so the first check and second check is on the screen. You're at a computer checking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then this opening pharmacist who is doing the final product check, I'm trying to get the terminology, doing the product check, is checking physical products.
Yes.
The technician has mixed them, has done what they have to do. They put it out on the counter or in the area, or keep it in the room. And then the pharmacist comes in and does their checks, making sure. I remember on rotation, we would even have to take pictures of, there was this, I'm not sure if you guys have it, but it was like super high level technology.
Yeah.
You put the bottles on the camera, the computer takes a picture of it. It can measure how much was dispensed, like how the ml count that was left. And it was checking the lot numbers, the manufacturer, all of these things on the screen. And you were doing the physical check of that as well. Do you guys have that type of technology as well?
So we are actually in the process of adapting it. It's going to come live next year. But for now, we don't have that camera system. But that is something that our hospital's working on. So all those like little job titles as for like chart review person or, you know, chart verification person, it might be very different to every infusion center or oncology pharmacy is operating. But for us, that's how we kind of divide the roles. It's really nice because there are different roles, and for us, we kind of rotate every 2 to 3 days. So I'm not doing one thing all the time. I get to do chart review sometimes, and sometimes I get to do the product checking. So it kind of makes my job a little bit more interesting, because I can kind of rotate through what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
So,
things get old very fast
Yeah.
at a job. And you also told me one thing that's really unique about your particular location is that you are hybrid.
Yes. So you did mention how chart review and verification can be done on the computer. For that reason, for those roles, we can work from home. So also does help to be at home working on them because I can actually just focus on one thing, not disrupted by the phone calls. So it really helps pharmacists to be focused on the order or chart that they're reviewing. So that is something that can be done at home. The opening pharmacists and closing pharmacists, for obvious reason, they have to be on site. So every pharmacist will rotate through. So we have five pharmacists and five roles. So we kind of rotate through every couple of days. So it kind of turns out that 50% of the time I'm working from home and the other 50% of the time at the hospital. So that was one of the big complaint I had working in the inpatient hospital all the time. So this type of job allows me to have a really great work-life balance. I don't have to work evening shift, weekends, or holidays unless I'm getting called in for inpatient chemotherapy. But for the time I've been working there, I haven't actually had to go in to make any chemotherapy over the weekend. But overall, it's really great to have that hybrid schedule because it's not common for
No,
a
it is not.
pharmacist, especially for someone working such a clinical thing. So
Yeah.
far I'm really enjoying it. If infusion center can do offer them, not every hospital will have this. So I think this might be very specific to our hospital, but I know it does exist. So if you do some work research, it's great.
The infusion center I did my rotation at, it was 100% in the clinic. It was not hybrid at all. All right. And so for the on-call weekend, you're not just expecting every weekend that you might be on the edge of, oh, I wonder if I'm going to get a call. You rotate that as well.
So we rotate between five pharmacists, we rotate the weekends too. And normally, even a patient might be getting something, a lot of time it is pediatric patient, and we normally have the orders a couple days in advance. So even though we have to come in to make those chemotherapy medication, we usually know a couple days in advance whether I have to come in or not. There may be some phone calls that might be coming from central pharmacy or from the nursing side to ask about some minor questions, but in general speaking, we do it's not a surprise because we'll know in advance, so I can plan my weekends around. I do usually try to not make any trip plans when I'm on call, but most of the time that you're not gonna have to come in, but that is something we have as a staffing requirement.
Yeah, it makes sense. And rotating every
Yeah,
5 weekend isn't bad,
right.
especially when it's very unlikely you're
Yeah.
actually to go in.
Yeah.
And do tech you I think you used the term that if you have to go in and prepare medications, do you mean like you physically will go in and make the medications, or does a technician also get assigned an on-call weekend?
So I know for sure that every hospital is different. Some hospitals can have technician can prepare it, and with the camera system, pharmacists can check those product from home. For us, we don't have any technicians coming on weekends, so the pharmacists will have to come in and prepare for them. That's something that's unique to our hospital. That's why whenever we do the fingertip testing in media fill, that's one of the reason why the pharmacists will have to do it too, in case they get called in as an on-call requirement. But when you do go in, you do get paid. So it is, some extra money if you do have to come in to kind of incentivize those weekend requirement.
And do you ever feel like you're a little rusty though? Because it sounds like you're only actually preparing medications as a pharmacist if you get called in on a weekend. So how do you get your practice in to make sure you got your touch?
Yeah, so sometimes, again, I haven't had to really make any chemotherapy over on the weekends either, but sometimes when the technicians are, you know, busy, pharmacists might go in and make something simple to kind of, you know, help them out. Mm. And also that kind of makes you remember some of the techniques. And also our technicians are very helpful. So if, you know, someone wants to kind of make sure that we have the right equipment for the day, mm-hmm. They can be there as a resources to kind of, you know, kind of go through that process, because technicians are usually the expert when it comes to preparing medications. Pharmacists are used to checking them. So we are usually, for any hospital, I feel like we are usually not used to making medications, but always use your resources, ask questions, and until you feel comfortable. And also, because of that double check process, even if I'm making it, we actually share those photos to other pharmacists for that second check, so you're not the only person involved in it, because again, double check process is important, so someone will also verify your work to make you feel a little comfortable.
Nice. So I still have that double check system.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious how your transition was going from your previous roles. You did a residency, you had your couple years in the clinics, and then you also shared your first job that you did have oncology experience, but it wasn't quite clinical.
Mm-hmm.
So it did give you this, you know, foundation to work off of, but then now you have to become a clinical oncology pharmacist. So how was that transition for you?
Yeah, so it was very good that I had my first job, because even though I was only covering for adult patient and inpatient, that was a good way for me to get exposed to those type of medications. When I did get hired on at this current job, I did get ample training. So they provided me about 3 months of training. I was mentored by someone who's very good at those clinical work. So I got trained by pharmacists who are very knowledgeable in that field. I'm always asking questions. Even right now, I'm learning. And I feel like even if a pharmacist's been working in that field for such a long time, oncology is not an easy topic. And it's a very rapidly changing, because there's always new medications coming out. So I feel like even if you're a pharmacist who've been working in the work field for a while, you know, I'm watching CE specifically in oncology topics. A lot of time the drug companies will have lunches or dinners where they will talk about their medications, and they will provide food, and food is always good to have. So there are a lot of like learning opportunity that's given to you. You know, there are a lot of resources online that you can kind of ask for, but the advice that I have is always feel comfortable to ask questions to your coworkers, because a lot of times they might also ask for your second opinion on something. So you have to be kind of feel comfortable to ask questions.
Yeah. When I was on that rotation, she probably knows this already, but my favorite part was all of the rep dinners. There were so many. And we were going to Ruth Chris.
It's good.
Good restaurants.
Yeah, good restaurant.
I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And I would genuinely enjoy the presentation. Mm-hmm. Did I understand a lot of it? No, that doesn't matter. I just enjoyed learning, and like it was just so cool how my preceptor, it was just natural to her, and she understood everything that was being talked about. She understood what the standard of care was and how this would be impacting or adding or changing the standard of care, and the food was great.
Yeah,
I was always getting that steak.
Yeah, I know. I try to order what is most expensive on the menu.
You have to.
And a lot of times it's done at a very fancy restaurant. So
yes,
I'm like, if I have
to
pay for it,
you.
I know. Because chemotherapy is expensive.
Yes, it is.
You know, those drug companies will do pretty well. So it's very good opportunity to get good food, but also, you know, enjoy that presentation.
Yeah, and I think this might be a nice question to randomly toss in there. Why do they want pharmacists and nurses who work in the infusion center coming to these dinners where they're talking about these new medications, right? You're not prescribing them. So why is it important for you to be there?
I think it is important that people involved dispensing those medications know what they're doing as for safety of the patient. So they want to provide those informations to pharmacists and nurses who's on the front line, providing services to patients. That also gives them opportunity for us to ask questions if we have any questions about the medications. And even if the current medication's not on formulary for the hospital, it might become in formulary in the future. So it's good opportunity for drug companies to have those names out to people so that at least they have it in their mind.
And when you're making recommendations to the doctor who does prescribe, you know about this new medication that might be a better option. And so now that's your chance to step in and make that intervention. Yeah, I love rep dinners. If anyone wants to invite me to them. No, I'm joking, but not really. So you made good points. They provided training for you 3 months, but you also took the initiative to do more. You were looking for CE opportunities. You also utilized your network. You weren't afraid to let people know when you didn't have the answers and when you needed help. And as you said, this is continuously evolving. I don't know, and there may be another area of pharmacy, but I'm not aware of it. But I don't know another clinical area where drugs are coming out so
So rapidly,
rapidly.
right?
Yeah. And so you guys, more than anyone, have to be on top of things and catching all the new medications. So was that challenging for you? Like it's, when we reflect and we look back and we think about things, it's easy to like put in a sentence, but like, what was it like going through this process? What were some of your challenges along the way? It doesn't even have to be just the transitioning part, just challenges across your journey.
So I think we kind of mentioned a little bit what I found most challenging. Not only that, there's so many new medications coming out, but it's a very high risk medications. There are so many details that are put in before the medication can get to the patient. And given that it's such a high risk, I feel like sometimes I'm always working under stress to make sure that I'm not, making any medication errors, making sure I'm catching medication errors that were made by, nurses, providers, because that's one of our job is to make sure that we're providing that safe and effective treatment for patients. But just given that it's such a high risk medication, sometimes you might feel a little overwhelmed and stressed out, to make sure you're not making any harms to patients.
I can imagine the pressure because you guys don't have as much wiggle room for med errors, absolutely. And on the flip side of challenges, what would you say would are your biggest successes thus far or most rewarding moments?
It was the moment that I caught a very big medication event, and I felt like I prevented harm to patient, and that was one of the, I guess, proud moment, catching a big medication there.
Yeah, it was where in the process did you catch it of the, your different decisions?
It actually happened on the ordering phase, but it kind of led through two nurses check and a pharmacist check, and it was the final check that was done. So if you ever hear that cheese hold,
The
so
cheese hole.
basically for not even in oncology, just working in health field, you want to make sure that you're kind of catching a mid the air. And that's why we have double process in place. After provider enters an order, we have two pharmacists checking the orders. We also have two nurses checking the orders to kind of hoping that at least one person will catch it before it gets to the patient.
Yeah.
And I happen to be on that final check before it could have been a very detrimental med error, but it was caught.
That is a big deal, and that's even more rewarding, mm-hmm. to be like, if I was the last person that didn't catch this, mm-hmm. I'm curious to ask what could have happened if you didn't catch it. Am I able to do that? What the potential outcome could have been?
They could have, you know, had more toxicity or harms from what it could be, because every medication error can be small or big, and sometimes med error does happen,
mm-hmm.
and that's why we have the reporting system. Every hospital will have a reporting system where people involved or whoever caught the error will report, so then the hospital can analyze the process. Is there anything that can be improved in the process wise?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some employee education that needs to be done? So if there's a med error like that, it's a good idea to report it, so then we can look at the process and try to prevent any future med error that's at least preventable.
Yeah, especially since four people who are highly trained,
mm-hmm.
didn't catch it. That's a sign that it wasn't the person that it was. The error wasn't the person. It was just probably the process.
A lot of time it is, you know, process, something that we can prevent. Some human errors are
inevitable.
Hard to prevent.
Yeah.
But I feel like that happens at any hospital, not just in infusion centers. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we summarize like everything that an oncology clinical pharmacist would eventually need to know and be responsible for doing, you need to know the clinical components of the medication. So the appropriate indications, appropriate doses, side effects, monitoring how they have to be a dose adjust based on renal dysfunction, liver dysfunction, drug interactions. So that's just one subset. Then you need to know about IV compatibility, because some drugs can't be in normal saline, some drugs can't be in dextrose, and you have to understand what those compatibilities are.
Right.
You have to know which drugs get destroyed by light exposure. So then you have, like you said, the amber bags. But amber bags are those darkened bags, or
are put over it to kind of protect medications being destroyed by the light.
Yes. And then tubing.
Yes.
You need to know the appropriate tubing, as you mentioned. And clean room policies, techniques, and how to work and how to dispense, not dispense, how to, would that be part of the dispensing? So part of the how you would be going through the technique of drawing out the medications, patient education, knowing how to communicate with people, so having you know, some basic skill sets on effective communication, and you're working with the nurses and providers, so multidiscipline communication. Am I missing something else that you would, that a infusion pharmacist would be responsible for knowing?
Oral chemotherapy prescription, but also given that we deal with a lot of the chemotherapy, we are also involved in investigational drug. We might be dispensing some of it, and by that result, we have to make sure those drugs are especially stored well, tracked down well, because the research wants to know the quality of the medication before getting to patients. So we do a lot of the recording documentation backend for that purpose as well.
Yeah, that's another thing. Storage, temperature control, humidity.
Right. Yeah,
all the
all of that.
things. And can you break down investigational drugs? Like, what do you mean when you say that?
So I think whenever drug company wants to put out a medication in the market, or they might be coming out with, generic medication, or they want to get approved for a new indication, they will have to do some type of study or like clinical trials to kind of show that our drug can work for this specific cancer, or just to get it approved. In order to show that, they do need to show some study result. So they will provide us those study medications, and then the company will kind of follow through to make sure, is it efficacious? Was there any toxicity? There's gonna be, some reporting of the medication, for the toxicity matter, where they will kind of have, endpoints to see if their drug can be approved for that indication, or whatever the reason could be being in the research, clinical trial. So our pharmacy is kind of working with them to kind of provide the medication, but because this is something that is very sensitive, they want to kind of show that their drug is working. So there's a very strict rule on how we store medications, temperature requirement, or making sure we are recording all the lot numbers, expiration date, to make sure whatever we're providing to the patient is at the best quality of the medication that we got from those, research people. So there's a lot of documentation that needs to be done. It is a lot more strict on how we store things and track things compared to other commercial medications, but because a lot of times they want to track those information on those biologics or chemotherapy, a lot of time oncology pharmacy, just at another hospital too, they might be involved in some type of research or investigational drug.
Yeah, because if it needs to be in a refrigerator and you guys have it sitting out on the counter
Right.
and then they give it to the patient and they're taking the study
Yeah.
results and it's not working.
Right. It's like,
It's not because the
well,
drug doesn't work, it's because you guys ruined the
Right. Yeah.
drug. So
Basically.
all of those things that they need to make sure that you guys did what you were supposed to
Yeah.
do so that they can actually track whether it truly works or
Right.
not, or whether it's safe or not.
Right.
Because yeah. Because it could cause side effects because it was damaged in the storage process.
Right.
And the patients that are enrolling in these clinical trials, are they kind of at their last resort for a treatment compared to the standard of care that they have, or they're voluntarily signing up to receive these medications that they are aware are in the clinical trial phase?
Yeah, sometimes, not sometimes, but patients will given the opportunity to, participate in this research or not. And it can be something that is at a later phase of the treatment that they want to seek out for something different. But patients are usually consented for the study, and they will usually give an option. We don't have that many patients in research right now, because sometimes we have busier month and sometimes we have less busy month, but it's something that we do have throughout the year.
I think that that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I believe I asked you this, but you're not monitoring the reactions or efficacy as in your role, right? That would be more of the someone else in this process, because once the drug leaves your counter, essentially, that's kind of where your role ends in this process. You're not the one hooking up the medication and or administering it or analyzing for side effects, right?
Right.
That's the nurse.
So we do have a separate investigational expert nurses. I believe are more in charge of that. So for pharmacy standpoint, you know, we are making sure that product that's dispensed has a safe and effective treatment mm-hmm. to patient, but the nursing, I believe, does more of a monitoring part mm-hmm. that once it leaves our pharmacy.
And that's, I think, well, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that is standard for the infusion center, for the pharmacist there. My experience in my rotation, the pharmacist was not doing anything beyond the handoff mm-hmm. to the nurse. They've done those series of checks, mm-hmm. looking at the product, making sure this was stored correctly and all the things. They put it on the counter when mm-hmm. it's time for that patient. The patient's checked in for the day. The nurse mm-hmm. is giving the green light. They put it on the counter. The nurse picks it up and then they're off
right.
to the area where the patients are sitting and in their chairs waiting.
Mm-hmm. That's at least how my pharmacy has operated, very similar to how yours have. There may be other work environment that might be different, but mm-hmm. as far as my understanding too, that's the extent of our involvement when it comes to research.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to, I'm just generally curious if there are other infusion centers where the pharmacist is expected to do right. that. It's important to know yeah. if you're going to go into this field.
You should interview that investigation of drug pharmacists and find that out then. Because yeah. I don't know.
If you are one, feel free to email me.
Because I know pharmacists who specialize in that field, you know. Mm. I don't know if they're involved further yeah. beyond it. Maybe they'll make phone calls. But mm-hmm. as you know, that's not my specialty. So. Yeah. I'm actually not too sure about it.
Okay, interesting. So I guess you guys will have to do some research on your own. All right. Do you have any advice for anyone who is aspiring to become a pharmacist and now they've seen this episode and they're like, I wonder if that might be something I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for that person who has some time to kind of do some preparatory work to position mm-hmm. themselves for success?
Mm-hmm. So I did do residency training. It would be helpful to kind of have that residency training, but it's not a requirement. Some hospital might require you to have the residency training, but the hospitals, at least I've worked at, didn't require residency training, mm-hmm. but, you know, do require you to have some kind of hospital work experience just okay. because chemotherapy is, you know, very special subtopic compared mm-hmm. to just other medications. So having a hospital experience in general will kind of help you to kind of come across to more specific topic. If there's for me, I didn't have any oncology rotation as residency, but because the hospital I was working at did serve big cancer patients, and we did have one of the biggest cancer center. If you have a interest in oncology, maybe choose a hospital that will serve more of a cancer patient. So it's easier, and also you might have more opportunity, like I did, to kind of get cross-trained in that very specific population.
Yeah, those are good pointers. Is there a BPS certification in oncology?
There is, but I've heard even in Maryland specifically, it's one of the harder certification to obtain, and I think you have to be working in oncology for at least 5 years, so there's more specific requirement before you can even take the test. So not most of the pharmacists do not have that certification. People will obtain it, but I'm also waiting to kind of fulfill my work experience before I can even qualify to take the exam.
Yeah, 5 years is a rigorous benchmark.
Right.
Because I think for BCPS, they wanted 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was either 2 to 3 years of practicing, but if you did a residency, like you automatically were qualified. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's really good advice for someone who is aspiring. They can position themselves with rotations, even in their fourth year of pharmacy school, internships, shadowing, having clinical residency helps. And what about those who are currently practicing in their, they don't have hospital experience, maybe they're in a heart failure clinic, right? Or they're in industry or whatever it may be, how would they think about next steps to transition?
For me specifically, what I found easier to find job was kind of networking, because that's kind of how I got this current job, was through a friend who knew me, had a good words to say about me. So if you know someone who might be working in that field, maybe reach out to them to see if there's possible opening, if they can even come for a shadow, to see that's something that they do want to pursue. Because even for me, before I went on the interview, I did go in for the half-day training, half-day shadow see, is it something I do want to pursue? Because for me, I was working at MCare, talking to patients a lot. Going to infusion center was a very, a big change. So for me, I think reaching out to people, networking is important. Be good version of yourself every day, because pharmacy is a small world and people will remember you. And if there's a good opportunity, you know, that's how I got my job, fortunately, without, you know, having to look for the job. So,
That is very good advice. An emphasis on the pharmacy is a small world. whether it's for the good or the bad, people will remember you.
People will remember you.
And it's harder, unfortunately, to forget negative things. That's our human tendency to remember. Even as a student, it is very important to conduct yourself. Like you have some common sense, guys. Please. I had some peers in my program that would yell at their preceptors, spaz on their preceptors, dig a hole early in their career. I wonder what happened to them now. I hope you guys learned from those experiences and did well. But it starts as early as like you being in pharmacy school. The minute your big toe hits the pharmacy world, you are being watched, you're being monitored, you have preceptors who eventually may become colleagues. That happened to me, actually. One of my preceptors became my colleague in my first job. I had no idea that was going to happen. it was just like, oh, wow. And now she became my friend. And so you never know. So very good advice. Anything else that you would like to share that we didn't touch on prior to us closing?
I do want to mention, in case someone's wondering how I go from MCare to, you know, oncology. Some might be curious, because I think it's okay to not know exactly what you want to do. Because for me, I had to kind of take on different jobs to find out what personality, what, you know, what kind of work environment matches my personality well. I learned that I'm not someone who's as comfortable working in the critical care unit like ICU or ED, but for me, I was someone who's more comfortable in the MCare or outpatient setting, because I can kind of plan my day. I'm gonna know what type of my day is gonna look like, because I've already looked at my patient in advance, you know. So if you are someone who do like a little bit more like a planner like me, this might be a good career opportunity for you. For someone who has a similar personality as I am.
And you mentioned something that is very important, which, like, all clinical pharmacists should have attention to detail. Baseline, but like even more so. Like, you have to be on top of it. In your role. So someone who can who can focus. If you naturally struggle with focus, they may want to see the doctor and get some assistance with locking in.
Yeah.
If they have a certain diagnosis that prohibits them from doing that naturally, so that they can thrive in that role if that's of interest to them. What about some other personality traits, like you mentioned how, and I'm the same way, I don't like doing the same thing every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like to switch it up, and it makes it feel fresh, and it makes me feel like I can have more longevity in a role and not become boring so fast. So that's something else to consider. Whereas other people, they like to do the same thing every day. No changes, no surprises in that regard.
Some people feel very comfortable having, same activities on a daily basis. But like you said, oncology, there's always going to be new drugs out. Mm-hmm. If you are someone who wants to learn something, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for that. I also think it's important to work well in a team setting, because again, there's a lot of double checks process. You have to work very closely with providers and nurses. Compared to my M care, where I'm most of the time talking to patients, my audience, or who am I speaking mostly on daily basis, are nurses and providers. So you have to feel comfortable talking to other healthcare providers, knowing to communicate well, and feel okay to ask questions, just working well in a team, because your work carries on, and also you're kind of working as a team with other co-worker to make sure that you're making sure you're hitting all the checks and balances before it gets to patients.
Very important. And your temperament with people when they make mistakes, right? So you catching that last mistake, you could have easily went to like, how could you have missed this? And you could have chastised instead of coming in and treating people with this understanding that almost anyone could have missed this mistake. And this is how we can brainstorm not to do this in the future. And to your point, for those who are not fans of the continual learning, this may not be, oncology in itself may not be where they want to go into, because those drugs are coming out rapidly. I've worked with some other healthcare providers who are not fans of staying on top of the new guidelines and changes. So that can be problematic.
Yeah.
Certainly.
A little bit.
Certainly it can be problematic. So that's a good place for people who really enjoy learning. And the most important, I think, is people who like to eat. Like, if you like a good Ruth's Chris steak. This is a good place for you.
This is why I'm working in this role. Is because
arguably the best part of this role. So thank you so much. This was very helpful, and so much goes into what you do on a daily basis. Once you do a role every day, you don't even think about all the things, all the training, all the knowledge that goes into literally one decision or one action, and your brain is computing so many things, and then it results in a it's good to go or it's not good to go. But all the things that are happening, and there's a greater appreciation for how many people are behind the scenes ensuring that safe medication is being practiced, and it's going to work right, and efficacious medication is being practiced. So thank you for what you guys do. Yeah, especially as someone who spent a month on the scene in that environment, I was like, nope.
It's not for everyone.
Nope. It was, to me, it's funny because you say critical care and the ER, like, is not for you. I kind of felt like this was that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same environment, but it still required, like,
critical thinking.
It was a different type of, it was maybe because I was a student and I was overwhelmed. I never had any oncology.
Right, it could be.
Except mm-hmm. for the Naplex mm-hmm. chapter that I read. But, which in itself was like, dear Lord, yeah. like, what is this? I was like, no, this is too high stakes yeah. for me.
Yeah, it is very, some people do get very scared in that oncology medication, given yeah. that it is high risk, but for me, I'm a big planner, so it worked pretty well for me because I know for each chemotherapy, I know what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Kind of had very yeah. Process in place for what needs to be done.
Yeah.
So for me, it worked.
Yeah. It is wonderful work. I have much respect for it. All right. Well, thank you, Didi. We are going to close now.
Okay.
And it has been wonderful. Everyone, thank you for watching. And we are out. We'll see you later.